Well, hey there, Sugar. This here is Rogue, and you are listening to Comics in Motion.
To the Batmobile. Let's go.
Come on, bub. For old times' sake, huh?
Harley Quinn, nice to meet ya.
Pardon my French. Fuck those fuckers.
Marvel character ever, but you should never meet your heroes because honestly, he's a bit of a dick.
Now might be a really good time for you to get angry.
That's my secret, Cap.
I am inevitable.
Hello and welcome to Comics in Motion TV and movie reviews for media that are based on comic books. What we like to do here is we like to spoil everything we review, and so if you haven't watched our choice of the week, we'd advise you to proceed with caution. And remember, with an average podcast comes no responsibility. I'm one of your regular hosts, Dave, and joining me is a special guest. This man is half of the show Season's Greetings, a regular on Indie Comics Spotlight, and a pop gorilla. No, it's not Tony Farina, but it's actually Jack from I Am Jack's Musings. So
sorry to disappoint
to show,
you, everybody.
Jack.
At least you didn't say the lesser half. I'll take it.
So how's it going? I think, you know, I'm sure we did a little bit of Season's Greetings, didn't we, a little while ago. So we have recorded together, but I mean, you've just been clocking up the podcast minutes.
I know, yeah. From a year ago, my first appearance with Tony, then suddenly a year later, it's 1 to 2 a week at the moment, which has been great fun. And the Pop Quillers is keeping us busy, particularly in this spooky Halloween season, as we've been covering all the Michael Myers appearances since 78. So yeah, it's been good fun.
That is a lumpy season franchise, isn't it?
Oh my god, it is. Yeah, so I've done 8 of them now. I've just got the two the latest two, obviously, and his mm-hmm. name is it's Marilyn Manson, isn't it, that did it? Who is it that did the other two? Rob Zombie,
yeah, the other one.
Yeah, the other one. So I've got those 4 to go now, but yeah, it's pretty rocky. I'll be honest, as a franchise, it's not very good.
It's funny, isn't it? A lot of the big franchises, though, they are a bit lumpy. I mean, I love the original Predator, but that's very up and down. Alien as well, Alien or Aliens. It's weird how some of these franchises just can't hit that consistency at all.
No, it's definitely true. I mean, I wonder, I've not ever seen many Friday the 13th, so that might be next year's project to see how that compares, I think. But those two you mentioned are absolutely true. First one's obviously brilliant. Second, Aliens, is obviously brilliant. But from there, yeah, the rest of them are all deeply average, I would say.
Yeah. Now, this was obviously a completely unplanned segue, but speaking of franchises that are a little bit lumpy and not necessarily the most consistent, today we've been threatening to do this for a while, haven't we? So we are going to review X-Men Days of Future Past from 2014. So the first thing I'd ask you, Jack, is what do you remember about seeing this one?
I definitely saw it at the cinema. And I remember thinking at the time, that's the X-Men movie I've been waiting for. Because even X2, I find isn't, I don't think I find it as good as everybody else. I like it, don't get me wrong. But this was the one where it felt like finally it was kind of doing everything I'd want an X-Men movie to do. I mean, I guess basing it off one of the best ever kind of plot lines in the comics is helpful. But actually the execution here is well, what I thought of at the time, and we'll get to what I think of it now, was really, really decent. What about yourself?
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, that Days of Future Past, I mean, I am such a massive fan of Chris Claremont, but it was originally thought up or cooked up by John Byrne. Mm-hmm. So Chris Claremont wasn't really that interested in the idea of it at first. And so, you know, just steams in at the end there and takes the credit. But yeah, absolutely, it's one of those. And you know, back in those days as well, I know obviously Claremont was dense with his wording, but they crammed so much into, you know, an individual issue. And this whole arc, if you like, it was just 2 issues, wasn't it?
Yeah.
thing is they crammed in so much, and you're right, it is absolutely up there. It's probably, for me, one of the top three X-Men arcs out there.
And I reread it today as well, just as a bit of prep, because, you know, why not? It's only a couple of issues. It's so well paced for two issues. Mm. Like you said, considering how much is going on in there, I think they did something smart, which was keeping it concise to a few characters. I think that really helps. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the concept is they've wiped out most of them anyway. But I mean, and then the film follows suit. It does the right thing, and it keeps it tight, doesn't it? But I mean, yeah, the wordiness is still pretty strong in that run. It's the thoughts, isn't it? I don't mind the expository dialogue. I think I can cope with that. At times, it's the like, what would amount to, like, you know, 2-3 minute screen time if it was adapted directly, of people thinking stuff, which goes on a little bit with Claremont sometimes, doesn't it? I mean, I'm a fan as well, and one of my favorite comics of all time is his Wolverine in Japan with Frank Miller, covered with Max. So, you know, I'm picking at a guy who I also like too, but it's a time in comics that I'm pleased has passed, I think, is the way to put it.
Yeah, and especially if you've been reading a lot of modern comics, I think going back to a Claremont X-Men comic, it's like, oh my God, this takes me ages.
Yeah.
Whereas you can just breeze through a modern comic, can't you?
It's true. I like what Tony says about it, that the idea of, like, it's trusting the artist a bit more, I think, for modern comics, isn't it?
I think there's that, and also they're not bothered anymore about pleasing the fan who's picking up their first comic.
Yeah, good point.
So, you know, you don't have to see Scott agonizing about, you know, his optic blasts. You don't have to announce that Wolverine has an adamantium skeleton. So, you know, that takes up a bit of real estate as well, doesn't it? But you mentioned about X2. I'm actually with you. I don't think it quite holds up as well as it did at the time, you know, because it was 2003, we were in this kind of new golden era of comic book movies, I think, you know, that kind of started with Blade, but then you could say it really picked up the pace in 2000, didn't it, with the first X-Men.
Yeah, definitely. But and then they've got Spider-Man, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah, so Spider-Man was a year before X2, but I think... Yeah, we went back, I don't think it was last year, I think it was the year before that, and it just didn't really hold up how I thought it did. So I think a lot of the love for it is more about how it was at the time when it came out, and it was so far ahead of most of the things that had come out then. But things that have come out since have kind of seen it back in the pack a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Yeah, now in terms of me, I watched all of these in the cinema, even Dark Phoenix, which I kind of regret. But I think actually it was the movie before this that kind of rekindled my love for the franchise, because X3 is not as bad as I think a lot of people think.
Completely agree.
Weirdly, lots of people think, you know, put X2 up on a pedestal and X3 down in the gutter, and they're not that different. And also, having seen Dark Phoenix, you know, it makes the Dark Phoenix saga seem better in X3.
Yeah, interesting.
Oh, sorry, go on.
That was it. Carry on, sorry.
Yeah, so but when X-Men First Class came out, so I was listening to a lot of a podcast called The Uncanny X-Cast at the time. So they talk about all things X-Men and lots of other stuff as well. But, you know, so this was going on, and there was a very active message board back at, you remember, before social media?
Oh, I loved it.
Like forums.
My lost watching days. I loved it.
Yeah, and so I remember lots of people saying, oh my God, they're going to bring, like, Banshee is going to be in it, and that's fine, but then Havoc is going to be in it, and people a lot of people were married to, well, the First Class was, you know, Scott, sure, Angel, Beast, you know, you're looking at the real First Class, so I think a lot of people wrote it off even before a trailer came out.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came out, I just thought it captured that time, you know, in the 60s, and the way I loved how they knitted it with the Cuban Missile Crisis. I thought it was fantastic. So coming into this one, I thought, well, how the hell are they going to knit together all of these different threads and you know, make a sensible movie out of it?
Yeah.
And I thought they did a great job. You know, it was a bit like, say, coming into the Avengers, you're thinking, well, there's too many people in it. Surely it's going to be a mess.
Mm.
So, yeah, I was really looking forward to it. And then when I saw it, again, the fact that they're not sending Kitty back, they're sending Wolverine. Mm-hmm. Well, look, it's all about Hugh Jackman, this absolutely franchise, really, yeah, isn't it? So I'm absolutely cool with that. And yeah, I thought it was great. I loved it at the time.
I think the decisions they make in this one, as you said, to tally up the, as best as they can, the convoluted timelines and the blind alleys they're taking themselves down with characters and are, to you know, to borrow a phrase, are absolutely first class. And it puts it into a place where really this could have been like a finale, a grand hurrah. This could have been their end game, if you like, where everyone would have left and gone, actually, that was a brilliant way to finish this off. And I kind of wish, in a way, that's what they did.
So, yeah, there's no inner way about it for me. That this, if they'd have just stopped here, and I'm going to park the Deadpool movies to the side because they're not really in continuity. But yeah, we got Apocalypse after this, didn't we? And then Dark Phoenix, and it was just like, yeah, you peaked at this movie, I think.
Definitely. I mean, the reason why I guess this has come back because I've been doing them all myself, haven't I, this year? So it's been really interesting watching them all in a closer proximity to each other. And I agree with everything you're saying. The idea of like Last Stand is nowhere near as bad as people make out. First Class is decent, but has some real issues within it as well, I think, in terms of how some characters drop out and how that third act has Michael Fassbender being Irish.
It's brilliant.
It just
I love it.
Takes me out of it so badly.
What I don't get is, like, how can no one on that set is going, but wait a minute, I mean, for every other scene we've shot, you've had this British accent, which again is kind of unexplainable, unless you join it up with Ian McKellen, but I mean, he's basically, you know, in Auschwitz or something, so he's probably Polish, you know, and it's like, it makes no sense, but yeah, the Irishness just is pure comedy. It's at the point, I mean, it jarred with me at first, but then now I just kind of laugh at it. It's like the Spider-Man dance for me. I do actually enjoy that now.
Okay, fair enough. It's probably as bad as that, isn't it, in terms of taking it out of the world. And I just wonder if he did that all the time and then maybe it was dubbed afterwards or I don't know. It's so odd, isn't it?
I suspect it was a reshoot. You know, I sure. should have probably looked back. But
I think you're right. They reshot quite a lot of the end, didn't they?
Yeah.
But were they then saying he was going to dub afterwards and they ran out of time? Or I just cannot fathom the decision within the creative process there.
Yeah, I think I saw a quote from Fassbender. Don't take this as gospel. It's just a very hazy memory. But I'm sure Fassbender did try and explain it away and say, well, you know, he's not English, is he? So his accent's a little bit all over the place. But yeah, it was ridiculous. And the fact is, they've got a character, Banshee. You know, if you're going to have anyone with an Irish accent, have him. But it's a little bit silly, but it's got a bit of a charm to it for me.
Yeah, and I think, you know, we're digressing a little bit, but I think the point is coming back to where you started, which is, you know, as a franchise, as a series of films, this is pretty hit and miss all the way through, which does make this one stand out a little bit from the pack, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, with that, Jack, should we get into our trailer?
Sounds wise.
So many battles waged over the years. And yet, none of them like this. Are we destined to destroy each other? Or can we change who we are and unite? Is the future truly set? mutants. We now find ourselves on the edge of extinction. You'll need to go into the past to end this war before it ever begins.
Use your power. Bring the X-Men together.
It's good to take the two of us. Side by side at a time when we couldn't be further apart.
You took the things that mean the most to me.
Maybe you should have fought harder for them.
There is a new enemy out there. Mutants. You'll need a new weapon for this war.
I know what I have to do. It's us or them.
All those years wasted fighting each other, Charles.
I watched a lot of people die. Friends.
Been given a second chance.
Guide us. Lead us.
I don't want your future!
We were supposed to protect them!
You're afraid. I remember.
In a dystopian future, Sentinels have been programmed to identify and hunt down mutants and any humans who will help them. In Moscow, they attack a small band of X-Men survivors consisting of Kitty Pryde, Colossus, Blink, Warpath, Bishop, Iceman, and Sunspot. But Kitty sends Bishop's consciousness back in time a few days before to warn the others to ensure their survival. Now, Jack, what do you reckon to the opening of this one?
It's brilliant, isn't it? It literally drops you in, and they've picked a really interesting range of mutant X-Men characters to open up with that are bringing something different to the table than what we've seen before, and it's just so fresh and so different to everything we've had from the franchise up until this point.
Yeah, and I tell you what, my favourite bit from this, did you ever watch Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends?
I mean, not to the point that I might get your reference, but let's see.
Right. So, I mean, probably a little bit before your time. But back in the day when we didn't have loads and loads of, you know, there was no Disney Plus and we didn't have loads of channels and certainly no streaming. One of the few kind of superhero cartoons I used to love was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. Now, you had Spider-Man there. And weirdly, Bobby Drake, so Iceman, and you also had Firestar as well, a character created for that cartoon. And, you know, part of that, I just used to think Iceman was just so cool. And he used to just get around the place by just, I mean, he was stood still and he was creating ice. So he was kind of going along, but not really with gravity. It's one of those things. It's like when you see the 60s Spider-Man and he's swinging his webs, but he's above the skyline.
Sure. Yeah.
It's like, it just doesn't make sense at all. And the fact that you've got Iceman here, you know, in the first trilogy, you didn't see any of that really. You saw a bit of his powers, but the fact that he's on, you know, he's creating his little slide there and he's using it, I thought was fantastic. And the other thing I really liked about this as well is basically it's most of the cast of New Mutants. So, you know, to actually see them on screen is something I never thought I'd see. Obviously, we got the movie years later, but I think, to be honest, this representation is at least as good as that. And yeah, just I remember the first time of watching it and I had no idea what was going on. No idea at all.
Absolutely.
And then it kind of shows you first, and then you get a bit of exposition after, don't you? So when they meet up with Charles and Eric, they you have Kitty explaining that they've sent Bishop's consciousness back, and that's how, you know, they can warn their past selves so that they're not in the place where the Sentinels catch up with them. I thought it was brilliantly done.
Yeah, and I think that idea of dropping you in and giving you no exposition, I think is important because it puts you in with the characters, doesn't it? And it makes you question everything that's going on in this world. I think it was the right creative decision, absolutely. I take on board what you're saying about Iceman. It is, and I loved your use of the word cool, seeing him in his full realization of his powers. I was also a big fan of the X-Force comic in the like mid-2000s that Carl and Yost were doing, which had
I love it.
Yeah, had like Wolverine off being a badass and killing people. And obviously that had Warpath in it, so that was nice seeing him in that opening here. And Blink's use of her powers. I know we had obviously Nightcrawler on X2, and we had Azazel in First Class, but her use of like opening up the portals just seemed really fresh and original in this opening, I think, too.
Yeah, I'm not a massive. I don't know that much about Blink. I think she came around in the kind of 90s when it was a bit of a black spot. No pun intended from Sunspot, but for me with comics, and I've gone back to read some stuff, but you know, not some of the stuff with like Blink, but I'm sure it came out of like the Age of Apocalypse stuff. But I thought the visual of how that worked, and you're trying to, my brain is like trying to figure out how could she do that? How can she think in those dimensions and, you know, sort of predict what's going to happen and open a portal in the right angle so a sentinel stabs the other sentinel or something like that?
It's very cool. But, I think she does really well that other people don't, including Michael Fassbender at times, is like hand waviness. Like Benedict Cumberbatch is good at it as Doctor Strange as well. You know, like it must be really hard. I'm waving my hands and they're going to do something in post afterwards. At times when Fassbender's doing it, it looks like a weird mime, something that he's doing. Whereas for her, I'm totally buying it all the time.
I think that's a great point. I haven't picked up on it, but now that you say it, you're absolutely right. I mean, you just accept that she's creating these portals, don't you? And I think the Fassbender one, when you said about that, the worst one that I can think of is from Dark Phoenix. And I think part of that was to do with the camera work as well. Absolutely. But the camera was kind of pulled away, so you could see the whole of him. And he just looked ridiculous. He looked like someone at a Comic Con or something, just, you know, posing for a few photos. So, I think it's an absolute brilliant use of powers. And I have to say, probably that Kyle and Yost run on X-Force is one of my at least top five comic runs. I love it. And I know Rick Remender gets a lot of praise. It seems to be the Uncanny X-Force that came after that. Seems to be held in a little bit of a higher regard, but I just thought how they handled Angel and Archangel in that first one was fantastic. And my favorite commission that I've got, I've got Warpath, X-23, and Wolverine in the kind of Kyle and Yost black and gray with red eyes kind of
brilliant.
Yeah, it is really, really good. I'll snap it and I'll send you a picture.
Oh, yeah, do.
So, I mean, what did you think then? So, like I say, we get a little bit of exposition. We see the old crowd of the original X-Men, if you like. And, of course, there's only one person. We get an explanation why it has to be Wolverine because, you know, Kitty's not able to send anyone else back further or else it'd, you know, snap their mind.
Yeah.
So what do you think about how they, you know, sent him back and then he's looking all right at this point, Hugh Jackman, isn't he, with his shirt off?
I mean, why would you ever wear a shirt if you look like that? I mean, just middle of winter, what's your point? I've worked hard to look like this. Yeah, I mean, he is ripped to shreds, isn't he, at this point?
Yeah.
I think, as you said at the start, it had to be Hugh Jackman's Wolverine because he's the mainstay of the franchise, isn't he? I mean, I love Kitty Pryde as a character in the comics. Absolutely, she'd be up there as one of my favorite X-Men. But in terms of what they did in the movie, they hadn't utilized her really, had they? So I think the reframing of who it is and how they do it totally works. And it's so cool having the complete cast, isn't it? I mean, how they managed to get everybody back from 2 second cameos to, you know, Patrick Stewart's, you know, extended role in this is awesome.
Yeah.
That must have been a fair old back of the budget, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, the budget was 200 to 220 million, apparently.
Sure.
So, I mean, that is a big old budget, isn't it? And I can imagine a lot of that is on all the actors. Mm. And obviously the special effects, I think the special effects hold up pretty well.
Agreed. And it, you know, it came in for a lot of awards, didn't it, at the time, I think. So I think it was like the first X-Men or superhero movie or something, wasn't it, to get like an Academy Award and things like that. So, yeah, I mean, they're definitely... Again, looking back, and I think you and Chris spoke about the wobbliness of some of the effects, particularly like Wolverine's claws at times, and you don't really get any of that here. It all holds up really well.
Yeah, I'm just looking at it, see. So it got an Academy Award nomination for Best Visual Effects.
Nomination, yeah.
So, I mean, that's almost an award, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And you think how long it took for anything of this type to get any kind of recognition. That's...
Yeah, I mean, let's face it, Hollywood's a bit snobby, aren't they?
Yeah, completely.
You know, they don't tend to dish out awards, so I wasn't being facetious. I genuinely think a nomination for a comic book movie is pretty good.
Mm.
But, I mean, I tell you what else I like about this. I think it cleverly sort of, again, knits itself into history. Mm-hmm. So obviously we saw them join up with the Cuban Missile Crisis and how they explained how that all went in this fictional universe. But then they're placed back into this world where, you know, it's in the middle of the Vietnam War or towards the back end of it.
Yeah, I think they're just leaving, aren't they, I think, yeah.
Yeah, but I think... Certainly like X-23 and some of the other plot holes that you get within the franchise, if you think for longer than 5 minutes, I don't think there's too much in this movie, is there? I mean, I'm sure that there probably are little nitpicks, things that don't quite add up, but I think this knits together quite well with what had gone on before.
Definitely. This is almost like that thing we talk about with Mike, isn't it? How like, well, there'll be a comic that resolves that issue. This is the film that resolves all the issues the franchise has, absolutely. And I think, I really like the 70s stuff. I think I probably could have watched a whole movie set in the dystopian future, if I'm honest. But once we get past, you know, what's happening in the 70s and we get into the story of it, a lot of that is really, really good too. And the way that they tie into some of the historical real world of this era is excellent too. Like the JFK stuff is just absolutely hilarious. I don't know who they had to get to sign off on that, but I'm glad they did because it works really well.
Yeah. And what do you reckon to how Xavier is kind of been? Because, you know, Patrick Stewart's Xavier didn't give Wolverine the full picture. He just sort of said to him, you know, I was a different man back then.
It's really interesting, isn't it? It gave me... echoes of like Christian Bale in The Dark Knight Rises when he's chosen to give up being Batman. But I mean I love McAvoy as an actor. I think he's brilliant. I think and he pulls it off. And it's really interesting seeing Xavier at a low ebb, isn't it? Because he's always so stoic and so kind of what's the word I'm looking for? He's
like authoritarian,
yeah,
isn't
absolutely.
He's got that presence.
Yeah, and he's just always been that way, hasn't he? I know that there's this kind of retroactive looking back at what Xavier's done in the comics and kind of judging him for that. And I think that's quite fair at times. And maybe this helps to address that a little bit, that he's kind of aware of, you know, some of the mistakes he's made and decisions that he's done. And I think one of the big problems of First Class was the introduction of the Xavier and Raven backstory, wasn't it? That just didn't quite feel like that was going to tally up with the later movies in any way whatsoever.
Yeah, I mean, it created a problem with the X-Men 2000 movie, didn't it? Because it's like they don't really know each other, whereas apparently they've been friends since being kids.
Yeah, absolutely. But again, this helps to resolve that a little bit, doesn't it? The fact that they've not been talking and... yeah, like you say, I'm sure there's probably plot holes that people could find if they really wanted to. But having watched it a few times before, and then watching it for this, and watching it for my rewatch of the whole franchise, it really did hold up really well.
Mm. Yeah. What do you think of, we get introduced to a new character, don't we? And we've also got the benefit of hindsight of watching WandaVision as well in this last year. So what do you reckon to the introduction of Peter Maximoff, or Quicksilver?
I mean, a lot of it's play for laughs, isn't it? So I think, you know, we have the little line, don't we, about like, oh, my mum used to know a guy who could bend metal. And then Fassbender gets to give a little like, ooh, to the camera. I mean, it's a wicked scene, isn't it? I think it's another scene which is heralded as being like the best thing in the X franchise. And it is really good. I think I'd probably still take the Nightcrawler attack on the White House.
Oh, amazing.
Over this. I mean, you know, they're both probably two of the best scenes in the whole franchise. But I think, I wonder if the one thing that put me off watching it this time was the thought of what Magneto's prison was, and thinking about, again, the time era. And I'm getting a bit nitpicky, but you know, we're going back in time to the 70s, and he's in this like super futuristic prison, almost more futuristic than the plastic prison he's in X2. So I don't know if that's part of it, but yeah, the scene with Quicksilver is absolutely fantastic. And actually, I think Evan Peters, and maybe it is, like you said, because it's now with the hindsight of having WandaVision as well, like his portrayal of that character is really fantastic.
Yeah, and it's so different as well, wasn't it? Because I remember coming up to this, and you had Age of Ultron coming out around the same time, and it was, you know, it was known that we were going to have Quicksilver in both universes, which was a bit weird because he's kind of, you know, he's part of the Avengers, but he's also part of the, well, he is a mutant. And so I like the fact that they just had two completely different interpretations of him.
Because he's never referred to as Quicksilver in the Avengers, is he? He's only ever Pietro Maximoff, that's right.
Yeah.
Because they weren't allowed to use him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, one of the stupid little things that does bug me is when they first go to meet him, and he's kind of, you know, he's zooming around the room and stuff, and part of it is he's playing the arcade game.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
But the arcade game is going super fast as well. And it's like, but that's not how arcade games work.
Yeah, it doesn't match.
Just because he's really fast. So I don't know if you've ever read this an X Factor by Peter David, and it's basically all of the cast of X Factor, if you like. It's cast of X Factor, not the TV show.
Yeah, sure.
Not going to blast out a song, but they basically got, you know, Quicksilver on the couch talking to Doc Samson. And he's talking about, you know, have you ever been stood behind someone waiting at the cash point kind of thing, and just, well, that's me all the time.
Yeah, sure.
And I think little things like that just, it helps you to understand the character. And I think what I love about that scene, now it may have been done before in this way, but I can't think of another time where you get everything from his perspective. Mm-hmm. So everything else is slower, whereas, you know, I don't know if you remember the old 90s Flash. You know, it's all about him being super fast, and then you're seeing him being super fast. And to do it the opposite way around, I mean, I'm not saying that Zack Snyder copied it for the Flash, you know, in the Snyder Cut. You get a very similar scene, don't you?
You do. I mean, if we're comparing those two, this is far, far superior. There's no weird hot dog stuff going on.
That was weird with the hot dogs, wasn't it? It's like the hot dog's just getting closer and closer to her face. And it's like,
I mean, that's
what the hell is going on?
That's not the right shaped object, I don't think, for what was going on in that scene.
No, it was just very, very weird. Very, very weird choice. And the hot dogs are obviously there because, you know, he feeds them to the dog after. But I did just feel it was very off.
I'm glad I wasn't alone.
But yeah, so I mean, what do you think about the whole interaction with, you know, they're trying to stop Raven from killing off the senator, aren't they? And you get an interesting turn. So they've broken out Magneto, and you see there's a bit of interaction. Actually, one of the things I do like is how Charles gives the pious kind of, you know, I don't agree with violence or anything. And then he sees Eric and then just smacks him all on the nose.
Great, yeah.
But what do you think about those kind of, those philosophies, those outlooks? Because, you know, Charles is convinced that Eric left everyone on their own, but Eric's convinced, you know, Charles is the one who abandoned everyone.
It's really interesting, isn't it, how, like, the franchise has evolved from the first couple. Because obviously we've got Singer coming back, and, you know, probably don't want to delve into that as a podcast in itself about him as a person. But we've got him coming back for the first time since X2. It must be, mustn't it?
Yeah.
And the philosophy then of the movies was very much Xavier is right and Magneto is wrong. But here there's a much more grey blurring of that. And, you know, actually Xavier even verbalises it himself, doesn't he? He says, like, you know, actually Eric might have been right. So I think it's really interesting and to look at perhaps where we are in the world at the time and how things have moved on, like maybe in politics or in society, or like why we're now accepting that perhaps a little bit bad sometimes is acceptable in order for the greater good.
I mean, the old cliche is that Xavier and Eric are basically kind of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, you know.
Yeah, do you buy into that?
I don't know. I think there's a lot of things that old Stan, a wily old Stan, will sort of pick up some things and be like, someone's probably mentioned it, and then he's like, "Yeah, I was totally thinking about that." if you, I don't know, have you ever gone back and read those original X-Men comics?
I've not gone that far back, no.
Yeah, I mean, I love Marvel Unlimited, and so they're all on there, and you go back, and there's no depth to Magneto at all. He's a proper kind of mustache twirling villain. That's it. He's just a villain, and all of the depth came later. And I do think, you know, for me, the X-Men really started with, you know, Giant Size, and then obviously Len Wein had to drop off from that, and Claremont just took it on and just made them what they are and what we think of.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting what you say about the comic as well, how well they keep the cast quite small. And I think that's something the more recent X-Men comics have completely forgotten, because I don't know how anyone penetrates that, how anyone could get into the comics now. I love them. I've read them for decades, and I get confused now. It's just ridiculous. But anyway, digress a little
bit. No, I mean, I've dropped out of reading the comics. I picked up the House of X, like, big epic run and tie-in, because I thought that looked really interesting in terms of a fresh concept. But then, and I really liked it, actually, but then I haven't gone back into more of the world. I think in terms of that kind of exposure, it just became too unwieldy, didn't it? There was just so many different, like, you've got to get X-Men Red, and you've got to get X-Men this and X-Men that, and
yeah,
there was just too many, I think, for me to keep up, so I just sort of dropped out.
I agree, and I think the problem is, since, you know, probably, well, especially the 90s, you know, they've just figured out this formula, and definitely into the 2000s. Well, they could take a chance on a new character, or, you know, a peripheral character, and give them their own mini and see if that, you know, sells well, or just create another X-book and people will buy it.
Right, yeah.
And so, you know, you end up with, you know, the same core of people. So, you know, Scott Summers, Logan, you know, they'll appear in all these different comics. And so you can't really do anything with the characters. And so, yeah, I mean, I haven't read that recent one. I think Battle of the Atom.
Yeah.
Going back a few years now. That was probably the last big arc I read.
I think I was the same, other than this one that I picked up, just because I thought, you know, the concept hooked me. I think in between I had nothing, and then since I've had nothing, I think I'm with you.
Yeah. So What do you think about kind of how Magneto is willing to kill off Raven because of what he... after a little bit of convincing, you know, he's like fully bought into this dystopian future, isn't he? He's like taking Logan at his word. Mm. It's like, right, we've got to kill off this this person who I thought was amazing.
I think it does tally with his character, doesn't it? I think he would he would do whatever it takes, including to himself, I think, in order for the greater good of mutant kind. I mean, perhaps stopping short of, like, obviously killing himself, but I mean, I think he'd probably accept being in prison if that was, if that's what was the necessary step. So I do buy it. I think it perhaps comes around a little bit too quick, but actually, considering how much they fit into this movie, it's still a pretty tight 2 hours, isn't it, without the credit. So I think without any, it would start pushing it into those kind of realms of what we get now, which is, you know, a near 3 hour James Bond movie, in order to tell every single little bit of nuance and backstory and character interaction. So yeah, I mean, and again, I guess it works in terms of that puts us into the mindset of Mystique. So, you know, you were saying before about how, like, we're seeing it from Quicksilver's perspective. But I suppose in this scene, when we see Magneto and Xavier and Logan, like, stop the assassination, stop Mystique, it puts us into her mindset that, hang on a minute, this guy who I've been with for a long time and left Xavier for my life for, just to suddenly put a gun to me, it gives us her perspective, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I do think there's so much going on here. And I agree that I think it's consistent with Magneto. One of the things that jarred with me from X2, actually, is how, you know, Ian McKellen's Magneto was having a bit of a joke with Mystique about Rogue's hair.
Yeah, I remember you talking about that on the podcast.
Yeah, sort of taking the piss out of her, like, you know, because that's what, you know, he'd caused that. He was willing to sacrifice a mutant to turn Homo sapiens into mutants. And I just thought, for me, that I don't personally feel like that's consistent with his character. Whereas, you know, killing one mutant to save, you know, millions or billions of mutants in the future, that is a choice I think he's willing to make. The only thing is, I mean, I'm not sure DNA works like that. You know, if you, I'm not sure you have to be alive for, you know, Trask to actually still do what he needs to with the Sentinels.
But take an incinerator body or something. We're getting a bit dark there, aren't we? For
yeah, but that's what they'd done, wasn't it? You know, when she was disguised as Trask and she goes through all the files and everything, you can see, like, Azazel is there. He's been killed off. You know, you see a few of the other mutants been killed off, don't you? So I think, you know, experimenting on dead mutants is definitely in this guy's wheelhouse.
It's a much more grown-up X-Men movie, I think, this one as well. It definitely feels... Yeah. I think the rating is probably still the same in order to make sure they get the same audience. But there's parts of it that do feel more grown up in terms of what they're depicting. And also the convolutedness of the story requires an active viewer and requires somebody who's a bit more mature to be able to understand everything that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of references to historical events as well. You know, he's talked about, you know, Magneto and the magic bullet. You've got Richard Nixon there, you know, he's all made up and everything to look like Nixon, sound like Nixon. You're right. I think this hits the sweet spot for people who are a little bit older, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, there's a couple of, you know, moments of language being used, which are probably at the maximum you're allowed for a 12A as well. And
I think it's one fuck, isn't it?
Okay. So we're all right now, and 12s can listen to us. No more.
So that's it. I think we usually blow that out of the water in the first couple of minutes when Chris is on. I think we got it again to great effect. I think in this and First Class they use that fuck
they really
very
do.
Well.
Yeah.
But what I love about this particular scene where, you know, Magneto's going after Mystique. He's actually when Beast goes full on feral, doesn't he?
He has his own kind of berserker moment, doesn't he? Yeah, absolutely. And I think in terms of the direction, this is a really well, I was trying to find a different word, but a well-directed scene. Because we have the intercutting, don't we, between your kind of classic film stock and then your, you've got like the film crew there. And but I think it's handled really well that it never feels jarring. And we get, you know, some pretty big action beats, but then we get these quiet moments where it's the surprise of the crowd seeing, for them, mutants for the first time. And we often see it through like a camera lens or, yeah, it's a really good scene, this one.
Yeah, no, I do like it. And actually, you know, we were talking about an Academy Award for the visual effects, but I think the costumes are great. Mm. I think, again, like you say, you kind of take for granted that you've got all the costumes, you've got the classic cars as well. Mm. I think it all just looks fantastically 70s.
It does, yeah. I think, let's just jump into my head now as well. Like, I think what's really interesting is that although Hugh Jackman and the Wolverine character are like the still the center of the movie, he's often removed from the action, isn't he? So you know, you're saying like Beast having his kind of big action berserker moment. Like here, Hugh Jackman's not really doing anything. In fact, he's having his kind of freak out, isn't he? He's jumping back and forwards in the timelines because of seeing young Stryker. So, and it happens later in the big finale as well. He's not really involved there. So I think that was an interesting decision that although he's the linchpin for what's going on, he's not actually the big action star of this movie.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Now, one of the criticisms of this franchise is you always get like something on a train or something on a, you know, some convoy of some sort. And again, I have to pick a little nit here because one of the things I dislike about this is Magneto's gone full heel now, hasn't he? So he's trying to kill off Raven. Beast has beat the shit out of him, and I do love the way that you can see the blood in the water kind of thing and everything. But you know, he's gone off, knitted himself up, you know, put his own stitches in. And then he goes, you know, and he sort of flies up to the train where all the Sentinels are. He takes some of the train tracks so that, you know, he sort of interjects, you know, that he puts that into the wiring, if you like, of the Sentinels. But when you get a bit later into the, you know, you're seeing it through the Sentinels' eyes and what's happening and everything, it's like they're being controlled by Magneto. But he's just like mechanically controlling them because he's controlling the metal, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's not controlling their circuitry or programming or anything. And again, that just, that bugs me a bit more than it probably should do.
No, I agree. I think this train scene doesn't really work, I don't think. This is the hand-wavy, mimey stuff in this movie for me that doesn't really work. And obviously the thing I think it feels closest to is that great scene in Captain America First Avenger when Bucky ends up falling. It reminds me of that, and that's played, you know, to far greater effect than this is. And yeah, it makes absolutely no sense later on when he's controlling the Sentinels. In fact, his kind of segment of the finale doesn't really work for me because it's just another like I'm picking up a big object and flying it over, which we've seen him do several times before. Yeah, it's the weakest part of a good movie, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, what I'm conflicted about the stadium because I think it looks amazing.
It does look cool.
It's just one of those big, you know, trailer moments, if you like. You know, one of those big things that, you know, is going to get people like, holy shit, you know, how powerful is this guy? But it's just a bit ridiculous, isn't it? It seems a bit unnecessary. I guess he's trying to kind of trap them in, you know, their little, well, it's the White House, isn't it? But yeah, I mean, there's still exits, still a stadium.
Half of it's fallen down in the transfer. And yeah, I think it's just because obviously we were talking about The Last Stand before, and like that moment when the Golden Gate Bridge is really cool. And because it was the first time really we've seen him use that amount of power in any of the three movies. But in the last movie, he's like picking up submarines and ships and in First Class. So yeah, it just feels a little bit tiresome, a little bit worn out, really. I think they could have done something a bit different. It's the same criticism that MCU phase 2 came into, isn't it? That big thing falls from the sky. I just think, yeah, this was a chance for something a bit original, maybe. And it's the thing that pulls this movie down a little bit for me.
I mean, those tropes in this franchise. Mm-hmm. I think when this movie hit, it's like, I've kind of seen this thing before. Mm-hmm. But I think when the following two movies came out, mm-hmm. and they just kept doing it again, mm-hmm. and again, it seemed to be, you know, something that was slightly annoying became a big problem mm-hmm. later on.
Yeah, I like that idea. Like you said, it's a bit of a nitpick now, but the more you pick at that nit, the bigger it gets, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But what do you think of how they kind of knit together the what's going on in the 70s and then what's going on in the future? And actually, we were talking about the comic, weren't they? It's kind of amusing that they go to the future, which is 2013.
I know, it's so weird watching these things, you know, like Back to the Future 2 and all of this stuff, yeah. There, isn't it? Yeah.
Where's my hoverboard?
Yeah, I know, it's annoying, isn't it? Hoverboard and a lightsaber, it's not asking for much, is it?
Yeah.
I think actually, you know, I've just been criticizing that part of this finale, but I think, you know, what they do with Wolverine taking him off the table, I think it's really interesting. And obviously they remove Beast and Xavier for the large part of this finale as well in the 70s set segment. The split focus is done really well, I think. You know, it reminds me of something like Return of the Jedi, when we're having to keep our eye on all these different things that are going on at different points that all relate to each other. I think it's handled really well. And I think the sense of loss we're getting in the dystopian future, with basically everyone getting killed off, lends real kind of weight and pathos and what's the word I'm saying? Like poignancy to what's mm-hmm. going on in the past, that, you know, what's happening in that past really, really matters. If it goes wrong, that's it. Or it's all done. So,
yeah,
I think it's the most epic an X-Men movie has ever felt.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. And you kind of stole the parallel. You didn't know what I was going to say. But absolutely, Return of the Jedi was what I was thinking as well. Just the way that they're cutting, you know, you've got the battle going on in Endor. You've got, you know, Luke trying to be tempted by the Emperor. You've got the attack on the Death Star going on as well. So you've got these different things going on all at the same time. And the way it's all knitted together is really, really cool. And I think here it's brilliant. And, you know, you get Bishop gets his own little moment. Mm. You get Storm, they set off that bomb, don't they? Or it's the Blackbird that blow up. And, you know, again, Magneto kind of looks pretty badass, but you realize even he's been taken out. Mm. And so, yeah, I love this end bit, you know, even for its faults and the kind of tired Magneto stuff. I think it's all done really well.
Yeah, agreed. And actually, this is where, you know, it does do something a bit original, that the end comes about not because of a man of action, because of, you know, a man of words at the end, ultimately, isn't it? Which, you know, to tie back into the potential Malcolm X, Martin Luther King link, I mean, it certainly was, Martin Luther King was the man of words, wasn't he? So with Xavier talking Mystique down, I thought that was quite an original and quite a clever way to bring this segment.
Yeah, and I never thought about it like that, actually. But you're right. I mean, we've got so much action, haven't we? It doesn't necessarily have to be solved by the fists. Mm. And so, yeah, just actually, you know, helping her understand, you know, to make the right choice in that moment. I think, yeah, it's pretty good.
And nice that they acknowledge the fact that, you know, Xavier has telepathic abilities, which means he can control people if he wants to. And a couple of times in this movie, we get him being told, shut her down, shut her down. And of course, he chooses not to hear, and he chooses to let her make her own decision, which is showing his growth. Again, is, you know, interesting in 2021, when we're talking about trying to knock the patriarchy down even further and, you know, letting women have their voice and their own decisions and things, like, to think this was out back in the past. I'm not sure necessarily whether that was there, but we can read into it now, I think.
Yeah, but I think Xavier again, more so from the comics, had a problem with controlling everyone, not just women. But yeah, I think there are plenty of issues. I mean, Jean Grey was pretty, in those early comics, she wasn't great. You know, she wasn't well portrayed, but you kind of say, well, it's the 60s and what have you. But I do think, you know, it is the Claremont run where it really comes into its own, and you've got some real badass female characters there. Like, no one has done Storm better than Claremont.
Sure.
Me. And definitely not this movie franchise.
No, definitely not this.
But, I mean, what do you think of Jackman's performance? Because I personally am guilty of this, where I think he's a beautiful-looking man. Mm-hmm. You know, he gets his body into an amazing shape. I remember, you know, hearing an interview with him where he was saying about wanting to look like De Niro in Cape Fear. Mm-hmm. You know, he didn't want to just look jacked, like someone who'd gone to the gym and stuff. He wanted to, you know, take his shirt off and people to go, shit, you know, not like, oh, what a great body. But I actually think he's a really good actor. And when Magneto is, you know, riddling his body with the metal, I genuinely feel like that's happening to him. You know, he does agony quite well, doesn't he?
He does. I think considering what this is, his seventh performance, something like that at this point, and he gets like 8-9 overall, I think a lot of actors would become lazy at this point, and they'd be getting the paycheck and they would just be phoning it in. And he never does that. He's totally committed, believes in the character, believes in his performance, which makes us believe in the character and believe in his performance as well. Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Yeah, not saying anything about Jennifer Lawrence, but
she's better in this one, to be fair.
She is. She turned up for this one.
And then got out quick in the next one.
Yeah. Now, what do you reckon to how they tied it all up? Because obviously Magneto, you know, he drowns Logan. Obviously, you know, the future's reset, so they... It's not this dystopian, horrible future that we see, but he's kind of found by William Stryker.
Yeah, which again, it's interesting, isn't it? Like, and they never take that plot thread anywhere. I guess we're just meant to think that's how he ends up with the adamantium skeleton, aren't we? Because obviously, when he wakes up in the 70s, he realizes by popping his claws that he's back to just his like bone skeleton, isn't he?
And his ankles. Yeah.
So I guess that's how they tally that up for us, thinking, I guess, well, we know they had the plan for Apocalypse already in place because of the stinger at the end. So I assume they wanted him to have his adamantium claws back at the end there. I think the end's really interesting because watching it today, I'd totally forgotten that, you know, like Kelsey Grammer was going to be back as Beast and Phantom Phantom was going to be back as Jean Grey and James Marsden as Cyclops. It was completely gone out of my head that all these people were back for like a minute or two cameo. So it was quite a nice surprise, actually.
Yeah, and I can still remember that feeling in the cinema of, holy shit, what brilliant writing. They have not only nailed this movie, but they've managed to write out X3, which at the time was, you know, the worst thought of part of the franchise. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, wow, what an amazing job that is.
I mean,
and then they fucked it up.
I mean, you and I discussed it. That's a bit unfairly maligned anyway. The one thing that isn't is the treatment of the character of Cyclops, because that is fucking awful. So yeah, I'm glad that that's retconned. You know, the stuff that happens with Jean in terms of the Phoenix Force isn't great in that movie, but the end of it between her and Wolverine is pretty good. But yeah, the retconning and getting Cyclops back is very welcome.
I think it was because James Marsden wanted to do it was the Brandon Routh Superman,
that's right,
wasn't it? Superman Returns.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it's never usually good when they do a rapid rewrite. So I can kind of forgive X3. And like I say, I do think it is better when you go back. But certainly at this time, it was thought of as quite a poor movie. So I think that was really well done. And like you say, we get the stinger at the end, don't we?
Yeah, which again, you know, maybe we just pretend that that's where it stops.
That's the thing, isn't it? So, you know, they fully embrace the end credit, but because you know what's coming next, it's like, yeah. And of course, you know, in your rewatch now, unfortunately, Jack, because we've done this, I guess you're going to have to watch it.
I absolutely am. Yeah. I've got Deadpool to come in between, thankfully. But yeah, I've only ever seen Apocalypse once, and my memory is not very supportive of that movie in any way whatsoever. But I mean, you know, but after that, you get a couple of really decent ones. And I'm not quite as harsh on Dark Phoenix, I don't think, as you are, perhaps. And I've not actually seen New Mutants, which was the point of, I wanted to watch them all in the build-up to watching the New Mutants. So that's going to be a fresh first-time watch for me.
I think that movie is better than what it's given credit for. So, I guess I had pretty low expectations going into it.
Helps, yeah.
But I thought it was a decent job. It's kind of half finished, you know. That's how it feels, and it was a bit of a victim of, you know, the Fox takeover.
So has it got a bit of the like Fan Four stick about it, because that feels unfinished, doesn't it? That atrocious Fantastic Four movie.
Oh, that's just plain shit.
Which is like two thirds of the movie, isn't it? As well,
that is just really bad. But no, I showed it to my girls, and they loved it.
Okay.
And the thing is, with the New Mutants, you do have decent representation.
Mm.
You know, some of the, like Danny Moonstar is a great character, but unfortunately, again, it's another one that she's not really been written the same since Chris Claremont. You know, Magic, Ilyana Rasputin.
Yeah, great character.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't want to build it up too much because, like I say, I went in with low expectations, seen it a few times now, and I do think it gets a bad rap.
Good, okay.
But shall we get into our final review?
I think as we're already talking about the films that come next, that would make sense, yeah.
Yeah, I just realised. Now, before I'm going to offer it to yourself, should I do a Max thing? Because Max has a good way of putting it. He says that he lets the guest have the last word. But what I'll do, we'll figure that out in a minute. We'll just run through the scoring system. So, and here's where I get confused with the VHS Strikes Back. So at the top, if it's the best thing, we have Asgard.
Yeah.
Below that, and we could be in the Marvel Universe, we could be in the DC Universe, we have Atlantis. Down from that, so right in the middle, we have the Hall of Justice. Down from that, we have Hell's Kitchen. And if it's right at the bottom, it needs to be blasted. It needs to be locked away. It goes to the Phantom Zone.
All right. I mean, that's where X-Men Origins Wolverine goes for me.
You know, that is like a dirty cheeseburger for me.
I know you and Chris like it. Yeah.
I think it's, you know, I can appreciate its like flaws, but it's just dumb fun.
Yeah, fair, absolutely fair. So I think majority of the X franchise probably sits quite comfortably in the Hall of Justice. That's halfway, right?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Other than the dirty cheeseburger. But this one definitely, and having watched them all within the last sort of month or sort of 6 weeks or so, definitely is, despite those nitpicks we've got and those little flaws, it is a cut above. You know, like Jennifer Lawrence, she was never really that into the role, but actually she is trying a little bit here. As you said, like Hugh Jackman has like the consistency of his performance and looks ridiculously handsome without any clothes on. Fassbender manages to hold his accent nearly all the way through. I think there was one scene I picked up on and I was like, oh no, please don't come back again. but I think it was just a little bit wobbly rather than was like full on Irish. So yeah, I think the performances are stronger. I think the storyline totally holds up. as you said, there's really very little plot holes. Considering how convoluted it is, that's an impressive feat. So I would go, and now I've forgotten them, what they are. Not Asgard. I would go...
Atlantis.
Atlantis, yeah. But a pretty high Atlantis, I'd say. I think the nitpicks drop it down for hitting Asgard for me. But it's a strong entry in the Atlantis.
Awesome. Now, to be honest, I think we're absolutely on the same page here. Mm-hmm. It's not absolutely one of the best comic book movies, mm-hmm. so I can't put it to Asgard. But I do love this one. Mm. I think it's a really good... A really good movie that knits together some of the history. Mm. You know, we'd had 14 years of the X-Men before this came out. And I think the way it kind of knits that all together better than some of the other movies have done or had done before or have done since, I think was a really good job. And again, they could have made it really confusing. They could have made it so, you know, you basically have to know the comics or, you know, you really, really have to pay attention. Mm-hmm. And I think it just balanced nicely, you know, paying a bit of attention, but not necessarily, you know, having to study it. I think it did a really good job. And there's several really good performances. We've talked about the special effects still standing up, you know, pretty well. And so, yeah, I've seen this one a few times now, and definitely it's one of those that's in regular rotation for me.
Mm.
Awesome. Now, Jack, where can everyone get you?
I am most active on Twitter. My handle is I am Jack's Musings. That's J-A-C-S. So that's where, yeah, I can be found for critiques and criticisms and... I'm sure more likely, you know, wow, what amazing opinions you've got, and I agree with everything you've got to say. But then that also links to my WordPress, which is where I publish my like diary of everything that I'm watching and reading. But really, you can find me as much as possible, as much as I can find the time, all over the Comics Emotion network in the places you mentioned before. So co-hosting with Season's Greetings with Tony, and we're in the deep in the midst of Angel at the moment after going all the way through Buffy, all seven seasons, so we're releasing season 3 of Angel soon. He's promoted me to regular co-host of Indie Comics Spotlight, which was an honor to do. So we look at a comic from anybody other than the big two once a month together. I'm one of the triumvirate of pop grillers where we post spoiler-free reviews of anything in less time than it takes to listen to a song. Currently, the three of us punishing ourselves by watching some really crap Halloween movies.
You're doing the God's work.
Oh, the Curse and Resurrection, I have to say, are some really awful cinema.
You know, I'm sure it was Halloween 3 that I seem to remember watching as a kid. I don't know if you ever... You used to go to like Spain and stuff, and you'd go into a little side cafe and they'd just be playing pirate movies or something.
Right, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I just remember sitting down for something to eat, and I just remember my dad being there, and they had Halloween 3 on. And I'm sure it was that. And he was just pulling some guy's head off, and you could see the spine and everything. I must have been like 8 or something. I was like, what the fuck is going on? And I just remember my dad saying, don't forget, it's like people behind the camera. It's like, fucking, you know, it scared the crap out of me.
Sure. 3 is the only one without Michael Myers. It might not have been that one, but to be fair, there's definitely some spine pulling at times. That might be 4, I think.
Right, okay. No, very good, very good. So apart from Halloween, I mean, what else have you got coming up?
Tony and I are looking at Fight Club 2 very soon on Indie Comics Spotlight, which obviously is something dear to my heart, considering my handle was taken from the original novel and movie. So I'm a big fan of Fight Club itself. So yeah, it's going to be interesting covering that comic. And then what else have we got? Yeah, so obviously we're backing away through Angel. And then after the Halloween season, the Pop Grillers will just be whatever we feel like, really, which was the original concept. We just thought we'd get a bit laser focused for this month because people do seem to like getting deep in on the Halloween movies, don't they?
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's going to be a compilation. I think we're going to release that on the 31st.
Great.
On the VHS Strikes Back.
Actually, oh, okay.
If cool. I remember. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was that. I spoke to Tony about it ages ago.
Sure.
But now here's a left field question. I feel like, you know, we've had a very in-depth discussion. I need to be a bit more outrageous to you know, to fill the void of Chris being here. So Hugh Jackman with his shirt off in this movie up against Tyler Durden.
Ooh.
Who looks the best?
I think as good as Hugh looks, as you said, he's going for kind of a sinewy look, isn't he? Whereas like Tyler Durden is just like kind of
Adonis.
Yeah, he's like the perfect embodiment, which is kind of the point, isn't it? It's meant to be that kind of perfect. Because I always love that scene in Fight Club when he points to the poster of like a Calvin Klein model with Justin Pants saying like, is that the perfect picture of a man? And then literally it cuts to the next scene with him like all ripped and looking.
Yeah.
So I'm going Tyler. What about you?
Yeah, I think Tyler just about edges it for me as well. But I mean, it just occurred to me what you're saying about I am Jax, you know, what have you.
No, I mean, let's be honest. If either of them would like to do any kind of body swap with my middle-aged paunch that I've got going at the front, they're very welcome.
Trust me, it doesn't get any better with age. No, it's been brilliant, Jack. And guys, if you want to message us, you can get us on Twitter, Comics in Motion P. Instagram is the same. And you can also email us at comicsinmotion@gmail.com. So, Jack, it's been an honour to have you on.
Oh, the honour's been mine.
Great to speak to you. And, you know, it's fantastic to go back and look at one of the, for me, one of the great movies of the last kind of, let's say, 20 years. And you know, one of the highlights of this franchise. So, thank you very much, sir, and I'll speak to you next time.
Take care.
Excuse me, I'm Eric Lentra.
Charles Xavier.
Go fuck yourself.
What in the ass?
Tell me something, my friend. You ever dance with the devil in the pale moonlight?
What?
I always ask that of all my prayers. I just like the sound.
Let's not stand on ceremony here, Mr. Wayne.
Would you care to step outside?
Come to me, son of Jor-El! Kneel before Zod!
Why so serious? Let's put a smile on that face.
I am Iron Man.
I'm Batman.
And me.
Whoa!
Hey!